Okay, paper 11. Welcome back, financial instruments team.
Hi, good afternoon. Fees and costs included in the 10% fees, in the 10% test. The request asks the interpretations committee to clarify which fees and costs included should be included in the 10% test for the purpose of the recognition of a financial liability. In particular, the submitter requests clarity on whether fees that are paid to external third parties can be included in the 10% test. The submitter has identified two views. The first one would support that only fees paid or received between the lender and the borrower should the ones be included in the test. Proponents of this view think that the standard deliberately refers to only fees when dealing with a 10% test and to fees and costs when dealing with the accounting of fees and costs arising from a modification. There is a second view, and this view would support that third parties' fees might be included in the 10% test. And for these proponents, fees and costs should be read as synonymous, and no distinction should be made when performing the 10% test. We have reached out securities regulators, national standard setters, and accounting firms. We have received 20 responses, and you have a breakdown of those responses in paragraph 13 of the paper. The responses received reveal that view 1 is more commonly observed than view 2. However, the responses also reveal that there is diversity in practice. It's worth noting that some respondents, though, think that the inclusion of third-party fees is not a determinative factor in the outcome of the 10% test, and this is summarized in paragraphs 29 and 30 of the paper. We have centered the analysis on the requirements of IFRS 9 and on IAS 39. The requirements in IFRS 9 were brought from IAS 39 and changed. Therefore, the analysis performed is valid for both standards. In particular, we have focused on paragraph B336 of IFRS 9 because this paragraph is the one that describes the 10% test and the accounting for any costs or fees arising from a modification. Starting with the 10% test, this is an assessment to analyze whether the modified contractual terms of a financial liability are substantially different, and if so, it follows that an entity is required to recognize the financial liability. The terms are substantially different if the discounted present value of the cash flows under the new terms, including any fees paid net of any fees received, are at least 10% different from the discounted present value of the remaining cash flows of the original liability. In this part of the requirements, please note that the standard only refers to the term fees. In relation to this test, we think that for the purpose of quantitatively assessing the significance of any difference between the new and old contractual terms, only changes in the contractual cash flows between the lender and the borrower are relevant. In other words, we think that any costs incurred with third parties are not indicative of the significance of the change in the contractual terms agreed between the borrower and the lender. In contrast, when accounting for any costs or fees arising from a modification of a financial liability, we think that any costs or fees relating to a modification can be understood as incremental costs directly attributable to the modification. And we think that these costs have a similar nature that transaction costs, which IFRS 9 defines as incremental costs that are directly attributable to the acquisition, issue, or disposal of a financial asset or liability. Consequently, in this case, third-party fees arising from a modification would need to be considered as they are incremental costs directly attributable to the modification. We have also considered the definition of effective interest rate in IFRS 9, and we have noted that the definition highlights different items that form part of the calculation of that rate, such as fees on points paid or received between the parties to the contract, transaction costs, and all other premiums or discounts. And we think that the same type of distinction could be done in our case by considering only fees paid or received between the borrower and the lender when performing the 10% test, and all costs or fees arising from a modification, including third parties' fees, when accounting for those costs or fees. On the basis of this analysis, we agree with view 1 that an entity does not consider third parties' fees when performing the 10% test. We have drafted the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A of the paper on the basis of this conclusion. And our question to the Interpretations Committee is whether it agrees with the staff analysis, recommendation, and corresponding tentative agenda decision.
Comments and reactions? Young Su?
I just want to say I agree with the staff conclusion. However, I have something to say about the analysis itself. I'm sorry. The first one is about the paragraphs from 28 to 30. In those paragraphs, staff wants you to say that the third-party cost or the fees are usually small enough to be negligible. But with I talked with somebody in the field, and what they told me was that sometimes the third-party fees and costs could be very important and significant. So that, you know, I don't quite agree with that. But still, I say I agree with the conclusion because, you know, when I looked at IFRS 13, the fair value, the paragraph 25 says that the fair value of the asset or liability shall not be adjusted for the transaction cost because transaction costs are not characteristic of an asset or liability, and also because they may differ depending upon how a particular entity enters into transaction. So if we refer to the IFRS 13, we can get a stronger, you know, the logic underlying this conclusion. So, you know, if I wrap it up, I should say I support the SEP conclusion with some changes in the analysis.
Okay, we'll go Reinhardt, Martin, and back over to Bruce.
I agree with the staff conclusion and overall agree with the agenda decision, which really gets to the point that Mariella mentioned, that the focus is on the contractual cash flows as between the borrower and the lender, and that third-party cash flows are not relevant to the 10% test. My one comment really is, though, in terms of some of the wording, where in the second to last paragraph in the draft agenda decision, it says, on the basis of these observations, the interpretation committee concluded that the entity includes only fees as between the lender and the borrower. I would have preferred to have some wording that focuses again on the contractual, like the contractual cash flows between the lender and the borrower, because I could envisage a circumstance where the contract might say, the lender might say, rather than pay me a fee of X, you can pay my lawyer. What I'm suggesting, and as I've provided some suggestions to the staff in terms of wording to clarify that it's those contractual cash flows, irrespective of whether it's called a fee or whatever it is, for purposes of the test. Not the fee.
Absolutely, Reinhardt. If I may just quickly, happy to. I think what you're saying is we should focus on the principle which is up there. Yeah.
Mark?
I fully agree with Reinhardt, and also with regard to Young Su, that specifically if you have widespread investors, that could be quite costly to rebuy a certain bond or so. So that would mean that the provision of or the fee for a bank or so could be 1-2%, which might be quite high. I have one issue with regard to wording. If we say in B, the committee noted that this distinction is useful. I'm not really sure whether it is a necessary conclusion. So that means that everyone who have read the standard so far could come to this conclusion, or whether it is, although it is very small and narrow, whether it is a kind of interpretation. So I mean, specifically with regard to this only 10% test, probably an interpretation would be too much. But anyhow, what we are doing here is we interpret the standard. So that's my concern.
Let me come to Bruce, and then I'll get back to the others. Don't, Bruce?
Thanks. My comment was actually building onto what Martin had to say. I mean, I think I agree with the conclusion, but I'm not convinced that it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, we use words like useful and similar to and all this, and I guess what worries me is that we've got a situation where we've said there is diversity. We've even accepted in the paper this diversity will continue, most likely, under IFRS 9. So we know that there's a challenge. We're saying we've got an answer, which I agree with the answer, but I'm saying, you know, there's kind of been quite a bit of interpretation, I feel, to get there. I don't feel this was something like that was the standard was obvious. I really felt that we had kind of overstepped that a bit and gone a bit further. So not that I disagree with the technical answer, I'm not convinced in my mind that this is just something we should push out in an agenda decision.
This will be two that you've done.
No.
Tony?
Yeah. I'm in exactly the same place as Bruce. I think this is the way that I would be inclined to interpret the standard, but I don't think it's the only way. And I think the thread running through all of this is that there is diversity. People have been reading it differently. And if I compare how easy it was to get to this answer with how easy I found it to get to the answer on the interaction of IFRS 9 and IAS 28, I found this one more difficult to get to. So if we need to do an interpretation there, I feel we need to do an interpretation here. There's also
an agenda decision,
sorry?
On 9/28 again.
No. I know where I was on that one this morning. I'm just not sure that this is the only way that you can read the literature as it is. I think there is also a practical question with this one, which is, if this is the only answer, what do all the folks that have been doing the other thing do going forward? Because we don't have transition guidance in agenda decisions. So if they have not applied it to determine the 10% test, and they either have or they haven't de-recognized, what do they do now?
Mikhail? No. Mikhail?
I just wonder if this gives room for any structured behavior. So I mean, if you say that third party is not included, what is the third party then, if that is another group company in the lenders group, so speak, and you can do this kind of arrangement. And from my perspective, I mean, if we talk about if entity substance is modified, it should be from the one that has the receiver. And if that is to the third party or the lender, I don't really see what's
John?
Well, unlike Tony, I did agree with an interpretation this morning, but I certainly don't see the need for one here. I would agree with the staff paper here that you could read the standard, that it's actually the change in the contractual cash flows as between the counterparties, and I would use sort of common sense to say that if they agree between themselves to pay a third party, those are part of the contractual cash flows between the parties to the instrument. So I agree with the staff technical analysis and the agenda decision.
Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely agree, Mikhail, what you're saying, the structuring, and I think that's what Reinhardt was coming to, and the focus is, as John said, is this change in the cash flows in the instrument which you look at for the purpose, and we will emphasize that when we look at drafting whatever, if it's an agenda decision or an interpretation. I personally think for me, IAS 20, the first morning issue was a lot more difficult than this one, Tony. I will get to this by reading the standard. And also, let's not forget, when we did the outreach, one of the comments that came in is that most people said they were wondering whether this was ever going to be material or not, when most normal cases. I understand you can have exceptions, but in most cases they were asking. So given the fact that this is something where most people are looking at view one, people question whether this will be material, whether we really need to do an full-scale interpretation to address this. I would say...
Piling on. I really thought in this one that the wording was really unclear. I agree with the staff's interpretation. I think that's the best interpretation. But I do think it's an interpretation. I do think the wording is unclear. And as I think about what's best for, you know, practice and somebody finding this, I think, and this being authoritative, I think an interpretation might be a better way to go.
Tony?
We'll come back on something Kunal said. The use of the word materiality with this is actually quite difficult. I think the message we got, the message the staff got from a lot of people was external costs or fees might not change the outcome very often. Mm. When they do change the outcome, the impact could well be material. So it's probably not right to say it's not material. It might be right to say it doesn't change the outcome very often. Mm-hmm. But if you're the entity for whom it does change the outcome, the impact could be, and often would be, significant.
Stated differently, if it changes the outcome by one, if it changes the outcome by one currency unit, the impact is material. is likely to be material. Martin?
Probably it's just a personal view, but in general, I do not like interpretations, because these interpretations you have to go through each and every time. However, I believe, and we probably could discuss it, whether an amendment makes sense. So have it directly in the accounting standard to make clear what is meant by fees and so on. So the question is whether it would be the wrong way to have an amendment. I don't know what's more painful, but here we have a very, say, easy question, so to say, where we do not need a lot of examples and add-ons and so on. And we are just talking about a definition question. And therefore, one could consider also to have this definition already in the standard. But
Sue, do you want to tell us what the probability of an amendment to 9 is?
I think you can guess what the answer to that is.
I don't think that's an interpretation.
No, it's not open to interpretation. Yeah.
No, I was going to make a different point, and I have obviously respect for your views, because you're the ones out there in practice in terms of what you need to get the right application and to get consistent application. But I was going to ask Henry and Patrinda, didn't we get quite a lot of message in the agenda consultation that people are concerned that we're tinkering too much?
Yeah, there's a very strong message in the feedback to both the agenda consultation and the request for views about a perception that the board is essentially tinkering with its standards. And people are saying very clearly in the messaging that we need to be careful that we don't sort of chip away at the principle-based nature of the IFRS framework. And so people are saying we just need to preserve that and be careful that we don't inadvertently lose it through many amendments to standards.
How principles-based is a 10% test?
Come on. Oh, no. It's the only point, but I think the principle is we're testing to see how much have you changed this financial instrument.
Yeah.
Yes. And do you need extra words to know that that means you should look at the contractual cash flows on the instrument or not?
This isn't a principles-based thing. This is a question in applying that principle, which I agree with. We're saying people are using different inputs. And I guess that's a concern. So if people are putting different things into it, then I don't think it's a question. We're not questioning the principle. People are applying the mechanics differently.
I know you're not questioning
that. I don't think you're questioning the principle. I didn't think you were questioning the principle. I just guess that if every single time somebody has challenges with the principle, are we going to come out with words to say, no, do this, do that, do this, do that? I guess that's just my overriding question.
And I agree.
But I think sometimes the inputs used might challenge the principle of the test. Mm. So you might need to wonder whether the inputs that you're using for the test are really respectful or not with the purpose of the test. So.
Marty?
Maybe a little bit off topic, but is this more in line with an annual improvement to clarify rather than an interpretation? I don't know, it just seems like it would be very short interpretation if it was one. And for the record, I do agree with the staff decision, and I know we're not talking about US GAAP, but I think there is consistency, which pleases me greatly.
I thought, in answer to Bonnie's question, one of the criteria for annual improvement was, I forget the precise language, but something where there is significant diversity in practice sort of puts you out of annual improvements. So.
Just a thought for consideration, because I don't, to me this is clarifying the intent of what the words were. I guess that's the way I read it. I do hear some of the comments that it seems an agenda decision, I think, would it may beg the question of, are we interpreting through agenda decisions, which I know we discussed on some of the other matters. So it was just a thought of whether or not we could avail ourselves to that option.
Okay. I'm getting towards a wrap up, but I'll bring in Tony and Reinhardt.
Mine was more of a process question. I think I'd take the point that Sue made, that the board gets criticised for too much tinkering. I think the committee gets criticised for doing too much through agenda decisions.
Yeah.
So I think there's somewhere in there is a balance or attention. I agree. I just think I completely agree with where the staff got to. I'm just not sure that's the only way of reading the words.
Reinhardt?
Just to be a little bit contrary, I mean, in many of our agenda decisions, we do give a steer as to what we think the appropriate accounting is, and some may say that is a mini interpretation. I think, Wayne, you mentioned before that we've been encouraged to be more helpful to people in what we do, whether it's a full-blown interpretation versus through agenda decisions. And I find this particular issue, in contrast to the issue this morning, I guess I take a different view. I think this is more straightforward, and it seemed to be more consensus among people. Like, most people did say view one was applied, and so I personally would not be in favor of an interpretation. I'd stick with the agenda decision.
Okay, we've talked around it and around it. Separated into two questions. Those who support the conclusion, however expressed. Show of hands. Everybody but Martin, or you agree with the staff analysis as opposed to? Okay. 12. Now, those who believe that we should do an interpretation, show of hands. Well, there are only two choices. I see only two choices: agenda decision or interpretation. I don't think annual improvements qualifies. And
do you want to apply?
Well, there are four possibilities. Amendment to IFRS 9, which I think will be a very difficult sell to the board. Annual improvements, I don't think it meets the criteria. So that's off the table. That leaves us with, we do an interpretation or we do an agenda decision. So, those who believe that we should do an interpretation. That's how many?
Six.
Six, we're going to be at a tie. Okay.
Why did you say it can't be an annual improvement?
Because it's too big. If there's significant diversity in practice, it's not an annual improvement. At least
looking at the criteria that we used last month in the IS 12.
It's none of those things. It's always a judgment call, but the staff is questioning my blatant conclusions. My concern, even if it does that, we do an annual improvement, we'll get it bounced back saying this is too big for an annual improvement. So better to err on the side of. Okay, I've seen a couple of people who disagree. How many would want us to pursue as choice number one an annual improvement? The two in that corner. Maybe three. Okay, that's not choice number one. And we're at a tie between interpretation and non-interpretation. How many object to publishing an agenda decision? We'll publish an agenda decision. Okay. And because it's tentative, we always have the opportunity, if people say it's too big for an agenda decision, to come back and revisit. Thank you. Okay, that ends the technical. Pardon?
Just one question. I mean, this
this decision is tentative. So what is if we got a lot of comment letters saying, hey, this is, well, too big for non-interpretation? So do we then decide on it again?
Okay. Then we would have to decide.
So, yeah. After the game is before that.
We have 2 months to find out, or 2 meetings. Can't come back to July. Actually, it cannot, so it will come back.